Hello everyone, welcome back to Murder, Mother and Me, and this is part two of our Christmas special, the mysterious and heartbreaking case of JonBenet Ramsey. If you haven't already, please go back and listen to part one so that you're up to date on all of the details so far.
Just to recap, in part one we walk through the timeline of that tragic Christmas, the discovery of JonBenet's body and the early missteps that would complicate the investigation. Today we're exploring the suspects, the evidence, or lack of it, and the theories that have kept this case alive for nearly three decades. Who killed JonBenet Ramsey? Was this a cold, calculated attack by an outsider, or does the truth lie closer to home? Let's unravel the mystery. So let's start by discussing some of the theories. Number one, the intruder theory. To understand this theory, we need to focus on the physical evidence suggesting someone from outside the Ramsey family committed this horrific crime. The first piece of evidence often cited is the broken basement window. John Ramsey admitted to breaking the window months earlier when he accidentally locked himself out of the house, but investigators considered it a potential entry point for an intruder. A suitcase was found directly beneath the window, leading to speculation that it may have been used as a step for someone climbing in or out. However, this theory has some challenges. The window well outside was covered in cobwebs, undisturbed snow lay nearby, and no signs of forced entry were present. If an intruder had used the window, they left behind remarkably little evidence.
Well, I think that kind of points to my thing as well about the family, because if he's saying that he's broken that window because he's forgot his keys and locked himself out, then surely he would disturb those cobwebs by getting through the window. I'm assuming he means he broke the window to get into the house.
If John Ramsey was actually guilty of a crime, though, why would he point that out? That, you know, why would he say it'd been broken months before and everything?
Well, I guess he's trying to cover himself, or at least that's how it comes across to me. He's trying to point it out before anyone else points it out. Like, oh, by the way, you're going to find that smashed window down there, and just so you know, this is why it's smashed. I mean, it could be completely innocent, and he is just trying to tell them that I actually did smash the window, by the way, so before you start, you know, going off on a mad one, it was actually me. And I also think, you know, on the flip side of that, even if her dad had smashed the window innocently to get into the house when he'd forgotten his keys, if an intruder had used that as an entry or an exit point, surely there's going to be something that they've left behind. Why were those cobwebs not disturbed? That's a bit weird to me.
I don't think you can climb through a window, a broken window of that size, because I don't think it was very big, and not disturb something. But there's something telling there, isn't there? It was Christmas, it was cold, it was Colorado. The ground was covered in snow. There would have to be some kind of footprints there.
Even if there wasn't, like, you know, a definite footprint, there'd be some kind of disturbance in the snow or something, wouldn't there? You know what it's like when you walk on snow? You can't not leave a mark.
Yeah, when I let the dogs out, they just leave a big trail right through it.
Exactly.
So, you know, unless someone hovered above it, you know, there would be some evidence of a person being there.
I also believe there was some footprints found in the basement as well, but they were unsure whether they'd came from, you know, her dad and his friend walking through the basement when they discovered their body.
And again, that just shows you the importance of not having a crime scene compromised. Then there's the unidentified DNA found on JonBenet's underwear and beneath her fingernails. This trace male DNA didn't match anyone in the Ramsey family or their immediate circle. To this day, it hasn't been matched to anyone in the FBI's combined DNA index system known as CODIS. Some argue this DNA points directly to an intruder.
That's kind of hard to argue with, really, isn't it?
It is, really. I mean, so she had DNA, male DNA, so we know it's a man, don't we? Under her fingernails and in her underwear as well.
And it doesn't match any of the family members or their close circle. I don't know. There's part of me that still doesn't rule them out. I don't know how.
Well, it doesn't mean they weren't involved in it, but it's just strange, isn't it, that she's got this male DNA under her fingernails and in her underwear.
Well, that says to me as well that maybe there was a bit of a struggle. Maybe she scratched at him or something, and that's how... Well, that's really the only way DNA ends up under your fingernails, isn't it, by scratching.
If she did struggle, though, surely there would be some... Well, not necessarily evidence, but it's surprising that somebody in the family didn't wake up. If this was an intruder, who could it have been? Over the years, several individuals have been considered potential suspects. One name that often comes up is Bill McReynolds, a family friend who played Santa Claus at a Ramsey Christmas party just days before the murder. McReynolds had a history of odd behaviour and even mentioned to Patsy that JonBenet reminded him of his late daughter. Despite this, police cleared him after finding no evidence linking him to the crime. Father Christmas? Who would have thought?
Santa Claus.
I think, you know, because there's this male DNA under her fingernails, and they know it's not the family, so it's obviously, where else would she get that from apart from, you know, an attacker or an intruder? That cleared him right away, didn't it?
Well, I was just going to say, they've got this male DNA on file, so surely it would have been pretty simple for them to get his DNA and just rule him out straight away. But again, that's not to say you then can't rule out anyone that's involved, can you? You're only ruling out whoever's DNA that is or isn't.
Another theory involves Gary Oliver, a known sex offender who was living in Boulder at the time of the murder. Oliver reportedly told friends he had harmed a child and he carried a photo of JonBenet in his backpack. He remains a person of interest, but has never been formally charged in connection with the case.
I mean, that is a bit strange, that one.
Well, what's
Why
the chances?
Why is he carrying a picture of a random kid round in his bag?
Well, some people are weird like that, aren't they? They hear about a murder and then they involve themselves in it, you know, for the
That's
attention.
That's very true, yeah.
Yeah, for whatever reason, I've no idea, but it's just that kind of mindset, isn't it? But, you know, he's telling friends he's harmed a child. He's a good suspect, isn't he?
He is a good suspect, yeah. I mean, they all are at this point, to me.
Well, Father Christmas isn't.
No, well, he's been ruled out, so we can get rid of Santa.
He's gone back to the North Pole now.
Yeah. That was a bad joke, Mum.
While the intruder theory seems plausible at first glance, it raises a troubling question. Why would someone go through the effort of writing a long ransom note only to leave JonBenet's body in the house? If the crime was premeditated, it seems like a poorly executed plan. And if it wasn't premeditated, why compose a 3-page note at all?
That's the sticking point for me in this. No matter which way you look at it, it's a weird piece of evidence.
It's that ransom note, isn't it? It doesn't make sense at all.
The ransom note makes zero sense. Whether you planned it or you didn't plan it, either way, it doesn't make sense. Because they didn't plan it well enough to take the ransom note with them. So they've still sat and took time to write this note within the household.
If the family actually fabricated this whole situation, it would have been better if they didn't write a ransom note and just got up and JonBenet had gone. And then, you know, they phoned the police. But this ransom note is... It really, as I say, puts them under the glare of suspicion, doesn't it?
Well, I'm assuming also that, you know, with handwriting experts and stuff, surely they must have been able to figure out at least to a degree that it wasn't Patsy or John that had wrote this note.
I think they did match this handwriting. I think they did say it was a match for Patsy's.
I remember something like that as well. That's what just popped into my head.
Or there was so many
similarities to her handwriting, yeah. And I think, out of everything we've heard so far, the only thing with this ransom note that makes sense in my brain is that it was written by someone in the family. Because I just don't think if you're committing a crime, you're going to sit in someone's house and write a 3-page note. It just does not make sense.
It was written almost as well as if it was by someone who thought this is what a ransom note should sound like.
Yeah, it was like it was a bit too over the top.
Yeah, it's like, you know, if you watch a film or something, like it was saying, there was some sort of references that were similar to some films. But it's like me, if I was writing one, I'd probably think of all those things to go in it, you know. I'm not a kidnapper, so I wouldn't really know what to write, but I'd think, well, what would a kidnapper write? So let's move on to theory two, family involvement. From the very beginning, investigators couldn't ignore the possibility that someone in the Ramsey family was involved in JonBenet's death. This suspicion stemmed not just from the evidence, or lack thereof, but also from the staging of the crime scene. The ransom note remains one of the most controversial pieces of evidence in this case. It was 3 pages long, written on paper from inside the Ramsey home with one of their own pens. Experts agree that this is unusual. Kidnappers typically bring their own materials and keep ransom notes short and to the point. The note in JonBenet's case was detailed, theatrical, and eerily specific. The note demanded $118,000 in exchange for JonBenet's safe return. That exact amount matched John Ramsey's Christmas bonus. Some believe this detail suggests the author knew the family intimately. Handwriting experts were called in to analyse the note. While John Ramsey was ruled out as the writer, the findings on Patsy were inconclusive. Some experts claimed there were similarities between her handwriting and the note, while others disagreed. Patsy vehemently denied writing it, but the debate lingers to this day.
Yeah, so that's what we were saying.
Yeah,
we just said
all that, haven't we?
Yeah.
Can I just say, though, who gets an £118,000 Christmas bonus?
Well, exactly. And that's what I was saying earlier about if someone did intimately know the family, then they're going to know that they're bloody wealthy and very well off. But $118,000 bonus. Some people don't even earn that in 5 years.
Yeah.
Never mind a Christmas bonus.
Could fill your boots with that, couldn't you, at Christmas time?
The fact that the findings were inconclusive on Patsy's handwriting and that, you know, some say the similarities and stuff, I think there is something to that. I've just got a feeling, I don't know why. Like, I've got a feeling that she is involved somehow, and I don't know how, and I don't know why, and I don't know why she's wrote that note, but...
I've always thought that Patsy Ramsey was innocent in this crime. And, you know, JonBenet, I think, was like a special child to them. They'd waited to have her and so on and so forth. And I just don't see the reasoning behind it. The only theory I can come up with as to why she might be involved is if it was an accident. And I think if it was an accident involving Patsy or John, they would have just called 911. But what if it was Burke? That's her other child. And her instinct as a mother would be to protect her child.
She doesn't want to lose two children at the same time.
Yeah. So for me, that's a strong possibility. And she was hysterical on the phone. But then you would be, wouldn't you, if all this had happened? I still don't know how you'd be able to sit down and write a ransom note 3 pages long, then.
Well, you don't know what people do under stress, do you? Or under pressure, or in a...
Well, it's kind of like survival mode, isn't it?
Exactly, exactly. And she might have thought that was the best way to get out, not get out of it, but to get Burke potentially out of that situation.
I mean, I don't know when JonBenet actually died, but this could have been hours later, so they may have took a few hours doing this, and she's pulled herself together a little bit just
enough
to
write the note.
Enough to write the note.
Yeah.
Another point of contention was the Ramseys' behaviour in the aftermath of JonBenet's murder. They hired high-profile attorneys and private investigators within days of the crime, and they avoided formal interviews with police for months. While this may have been a logical response to mounting public scrutiny, it struck many as suspicious. To further complicate matters, the Ramseys seemed to play the media game strategically. They appeared on national television, gave tearful interviews, and insisted they were innocent. But some viewed these appearances as rehearsed and insincere.
I mean, that much I'm going to disagree with. Well, I don't see that as suspicious.
I don't see it as suspicious because I think, you know, they are a high-profile family. They've got access to attorneys, and, you know, you've seen so many cases where people have not asked for an attorney and then it's all been used against them, and they've been innocent. So that would be the first thing I think I'd do.
Yeah, and let's not forget that they're very, very well off financially, so they're probably going to pay for the top attorneys that are going to say, keep your mouth shut, don't say a word until we tell you what to say. So I actually don't see that as suspicious at all, to be honest. I think they are just acting like a grieving family.
I think this is really as well a situation that they can't win, because if they appear in public, they're damned, and if they don't appear in public, they're damned. And it's the same with all of these big cases, isn't it?
It's a bit like Madeleine McCann, isn't it, with her mum and dad?
Everybody's got an opinion, and
whatever they say is held against them.
As they always say, no one knows how they would act in these circumstances. You know, no one knows what effect it has on you and people's
there's not a correct way to act, is there?
People's behaviour is very different, isn't it? You know, as an individual, everyone processes things differently and reacts differently. So there's no right or wrong, really. Now let's move on to theory three, Burke Ramsey. This is one of my favourite theories, really, I think. So, in recent years, JonBenet's older brother, Burke Ramsey, has been the focus of intense speculation. He was 9 years old at the time of her death, and police initially treated him as a witness, not a suspect. Burke's involvement is tied to two key pieces of evidence. First, the bowl of pineapple on the kitchen table. Burke's fingerprints were found on the bowl, and JonBenet had undigested pineapple in his stomach. This detail is important because Patsy and John both denied giving JonBenet pineapple that night, raising questions about what happened in the early hours of December the 26th. The theory goes like this. JonBenet took a piece of Burke's pineapple, leading to a sibling altercation that escalated. In this version of events, Burke allegedly struck JonBenet in a fit of anger, accidentally killing her. The parents, horrified, staged the scene to protect their son. Burke has always denied any involvement, and there's no direct evidence linking him to JonBenet's death. However, in 2016, he appeared on the Dr. Phil show to discuss the case, and his unusual demeanour reignited public suspicion. Body language experts debated whether his nervous smiles were signs of deception or simply a coping mechanism under stress. That's a bit unfair, really, you know. I mean, he was 9 years of age when it happened, and although, as I say, this is one of my favourite theories, you know, he could be completely innocent and then he's thrust into the public eye again. And he was just a kid at the time, you know. And as I say, everyone comes across differently, don't they?
Well, have you watched the interview with him from Dr. Phil from 2016?
I watched it a good while ago.
You need to watch it again, and I urge everyone to watch it because it is quite... I'm just going to say it's strange. Like, his mannerisms, the way he talks, the way his mouth moves. I don't know. There's something creepy about
it. That could just be self-consciousness, though, couldn't it?
Of course it could. There could be a multitude of things. It could be anything.
Apart from this, I think he's kind of led a private life away from the public eye. So, you know, if you're suddenly put in front of TV cameras, I'd be exactly the same, probably.
I mean, it's not a massive stretch to think that theory could be true, is it, really?
As I say, that's one of my favourite theories. I think it's one of the most, not favourites.
Plausible.
Plausible, yeah. It's very likely, sort of, a very likely scenario to have happened.
Well, and also, you know, siblings fight all the time. Think of me and, you know, my brother and my sister. We used to fight all the time when we were that age.
That's exactly what I'm basing it on. I'm saying I have seen this happen before my own eyes on several occasions.
But then, you know, again, on the flip side of this, it's not to say that Burke's just said to JonBenet, hey, do you want a piece of pineapple? And she's just ate it, and that's it. That's all that means.
Yeah.
Do you know what
and
I mean?
And he's gone back to bed, and she's gone back to bed.
Yeah, and then something else has transpired, but it is definitely a good theory to consider, I think.
At that age, at 9 years of age, he wouldn't even realise what he's done, would he?
No, and to be honest, I don't think anyone really considered him as a suspect, you know, like this is just said, really, until 2016 when this interview with Dr. Phil came out. I think his demeanour and the way he was in that interview made people think all of a sudden, hang on a minute, he's acting a bit weird.
No, I think he's always been a suspect. I think this theory has come up long before that. But what was slightly suspicious, or not as you look at it, was the fact that they whisked him out the way and he didn't speak to anyone or anything, you know. But then you think, if this has just happened to his sister, you'd want to get that child out of the way, you know, so he's not sort of witnessing all this. But was it for other reasons?
Well, you would, but I also think maybe that's a bit of a slip up by the police again, because, you know, he's not a baby, is he? He's 9 years old. You can have a conversation with a 9 year old. They're gonna know stuff, they're gonna say stuff. So if I'm the police, I'm getting him in an interview room and saying, okay, tell me what happened, did you see anything? Because you know what kids are like at that age, they'll just say it how it is. They won't sugarcoat anything. They won't try and hide anything or manipulate it.
Well, they would have got a child psychologist in, wouldn't they, to do it sort of...
Yeah, that's what I mean.
Get the info out.
Under the right supervision, obviously, but the fact that they didn't do that, I think, is another mistake by the police.
Well, this case was very badly handled from the beginning. It's documented as so. One of the reasons the JonBenet Ramsey case remains so compelling is that it offers just enough evidence to fuel speculation, but not enough to prove anything conclusively. From the intruder theory to the family suspicion, every possibility has its strengths and weaknesses. What we do know is that mistakes in the investigation likely doom this case from the start. The failure to secure the crime scene, the contaminated evidence, and the lack of immediate cooperation between police and the district attorney's office all created a perfect storm for an unsolved mystery. Meanwhile, the Ramseys lived under a cloud of suspicion for the rest of their lives. Patsy Ramsey passed away in 2006 after a long battle with cancer, and to her dying day she maintained her innocence. John Ramsey, now in his 80s, continues to advocate for the case to be solved. The case of JonBenet is a tragic reminder of how fragile justice can be. She was a bright, beautiful 6-year-old girl with her whole life ahead of her. And yet here we are, decades later, still asking the same questions. Who killed JonBenet Ramsey? Will we ever know? Advances in DNA technology offer a glimmer of hope, but as of now, this case remains as cold as the snowy morning when JonBenet was found. JonBenet Ramsey would have been 33 years old today. As we wrap up this case, we can't help but think of all the milestones she missed, the life she never got to live. While the case remains unsolved, we can only hope that one day, someone will uncover the truth and bring justice to JonBenet.
Okay, that was a bit of a heavy one, wasn't it, for Christmas time?
It was, wasn't it? And the fact that it happened on Christmas Day, though.
And also, she would be the same age as I am today.
That's weird, isn't it?
That is weird.
Think of when you were six and all the life you've lived in between.
And all the things I've done over the years, I know, and she's never got to do any of them.
And it was all unfulfilled, wasn't it? Because she probably had so much potential in her.
So, after listening to everything, all of the evidence, well, like we've said loads of times, the lack of... and all the suspects and everything, what do you think happened in your heart of hearts?
Well, we never really know, do we? But if I had to pick a theory, I've said it time and time again, I think it was an accidental death. I think it involved Burke, and I think it was covered up.
I'm going to agree with you on that one. I think that's exactly what's happened. I just think an intruder is too unlikely, based purely on the ransom note.
Well, based also on the fact that the entry point was not a feasible entry point.
Yeah, exactly. And I think there's just too many things that are not adding up rather than adding up. And I do think the police completely botched this entire case.
I think it's more a case of taking away the theories that don't fit and leaving it with what actually does fit. And for me, that is the only one that fits.
And it's just horrendous to think that, you know, her parents, if they did cover this up, how horrendous that is.
Well, for them to actually live with knowing that, but probably thinking, well, it happened and they couldn't change that, but at least they saved the other child. Who knows what you would do in that moment of panic, and once it got underway, they couldn't change that then.
Well, it's like you said, you know, people are so quick to judge, but you never know how you will act in any situation until it happens, do you? And there's no right or wrong way to act.
It's very similar, isn't it, to the Madeleine McCann case, in that, you know, she was never, well, she was never found, but it's that whole thing about, is it a family involvement or is it an intruder? It's almost a parallel case.
Completely, yeah. And, you know, like I said before, it doesn't matter what her mum and dad say, they're always going to be judged, whether they say something, whether they don't. Everything's dissected. So I think, you know, I just can't pull away from the family involvement side of the story.
I think we're going to have to leave that one there, aren't we? And just let everyone make their own minds up about it.
Okay, everyone, thank you for joining us for this two-part Christmas special. We hope you enjoyed the episode.
And thank you all for joining us for season one of Murder, Mother and Me.
We hope to see you all again in 2025.
One last thing. Merry Christmas, everyone.
But remember, if you can't do the time,
don't do the crime.